Well, Frank, give us a little background about you.
Well, I've been a wordsmith all my life. I started writing probably with some degree of seriousness in high school. I had a wonderful journalism teacher, and it was just a great class, which kind of launched me into journalism in college. And then following college, got a job working on a newspaper up in Vermont, and that led to a teaching gig for some reason, and then back to an opportunity to get involved in publishing. So 1977, I went into book publishing and spent the bulk of my career there at the denominational press, which is down at the University of Notre Dame, called Ave Maria Press.
Any particular bestsellers, the books that you're especially proud of publishing?
Oh my, more like authors. There's a very well-known author named Henry Nouwen. We published about 12 of his books. We were a three-pronged publisher. We published books on personal enrichment and spirituality, but we also did a lot of programmatic work for the church, and we did a series of high school textbooks for Catholic high schools.
So now you switched your role from publisher, possibly editor, to being a writer or a wordsmith. I like that word. And you've written a book called Vesper Time, The Spiritual Practice of Growing Older. And as my hair is turning white, I really enjoyed this. And I think most of all, because one of my pet peeves is that we live in a society that talks about anti-aging, as if aging were a terrible thing, whereas I think it's a blessing, and I think you do too after reading this book.
Well, I would share that. I'm not sure when I was 40 I would see it the way I'm seeing it now, but yes, it is a blessing. I like to refer to it as a time of grace and gratitude. I went for a long time without writing, other than like writing cover copy on books and things like that. So I started writing magazine articles when I retired. I think the root of this particular project was the awareness that this gift of time we call retirement is really a double-edged sword. On one side, we have this grant of leisure, if you will, where we can have wonderful choices on personal enrichment or serving our community or just doing fun things like reading that pile of books that we've always wanted to read or hang out with the grandkids. But the other edge of the sword is that this isn't a phase of life that we can look back on as we do on childhood or on adolescence, young adulthood, or on even into middle age. It's not a time that we grow out of. So that takes a little of the charm out of that third age, if you will. And I think it leads a lot of people to introspection about unfinished business, about what I call resolution. And I think in everyday terms, it's probably achieving a peace of mind or harmony. It's what the psychologist Erik Erikson refers to as integration, where we try to reconcile our lives of generativity, where we maybe reached out to others or tried to leave something good behind, versus our lives of stagnation, where we were self-absorbed or didn't try to help others. And it's what the spiritual writer Thomas Merton referred to as discovering the true self. And what he meant by that was the person that God intended you to be. And given my background and my career, particularly in the last 30 years of my career, spirituality became the lens for looking at this time of life, or what I refer to as Vesper time.
Is a spiritual journey different than a spiritual practice?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a distinction that I really wanted to make, because spirituality is an abstraction. It's something we lay over experiences or over groups of people. So you have monastic spirituality or Celtic spirituality, or you have spirituality for men or spirituality for women. I even noticed books on spirituality of fundraising and for spirituality of wine. I think there's more to it than that. It's a question of, well, how do you bring this to ground? How do you make this practical? And given my particular perspective of being a lifelong Catholic and Christian, I come to understand spirituality as having to do with our relationship with God, our relationship with others. Victor Hugo wrote, "To love another is to see the face of God." And I think an awareness of God's presence in our life, whether it's through our relationships with others or our relationship with the natural world. And I think of a spiritual practice as ways to achieve this. And we, you know, for example, prayer, or even gathering with our communities at church for public worship. That's a spiritual practice, as is going on retreat or making a pilgrimage or even walking a labyrinth. And the thought occurred to me, I see these as windows on God's love. And couldn't this period of life, this period of introspection and resolution, be a spiritual practice? So that was kind of the framework for the book.
And you go through these five aspects of aging, and I'd like to go through each one of them. But if there's anything that's underlying any of these, it's a process of letting go of that underlies all of them. And that's what is so difficult for us, that we're afraid of. You know, you said before that this is a phase that we don't grow out of, but I almost think that it's aging is a time period in which we grow maybe more than any other phase, because we're not distracted by careers and other time pressures and requests from life.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful time of life because we have the leisure to not only examine but perhaps experience expand our interior lives.
Yeah.
It's a time we can explain ourselves to ourselves and maybe even write a happy ending. I think the linchpin, you mentioned the five what I call colors that are of aging. The linchpin for me is memory and exploring memory. Kierkegaard wrote that life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backwards. And I think another way of saying that is that if we want to understand today and if we want to recast the future, we have to reopen the past. And I think sometimes that can be a scary experience. But again, it goes back to that sense of resolution about let's address some unfinished business. So exploring exploring memory, I think, is a key to moving through these five phases or five experiences, I think is probably a better way to put it.
In fact, that was the first aspect, the way the book is divided. Memory is the first thing that you talk about. One of the interesting things about memory that we can forgive, but not necessarily do we need to or want to forget, which I thought was an interesting approach. I think we sometimes don't differentiate that.
Oh, I think that's a very important differentiation. And I didn't learn it until, well into adulthood in an experience I had on working on a book with a man named Martin Janko, who had been a hostage back in the late 80s with the Hamas or Hezbollah, one of those terrorist groups. And he had an awful, awful experience. But when he was released, the first thing he said was that he forgave them for what he did. But he also said, I can't forget. That would be amnesia.
Yeah.
And I think he carried that through his life. I saw him just before he died, and he had pancreatic cancer. And he blamed the deprivations and bad treatment that he received. He said, I just can't forget that. It won't go away. But yet he somehow achieved this sense of peace of mind that he was able to let go of hating them and forgiving them for what they did.
But as you said, memory and the loss of memory is a big part of aging. And I think when we look back on what's happened in our past, we probably see it differently every time we look back because we're different people remembering as we go through life.
Well, I think, yeah, that's absolutely right. I had a nice conversation with another author yesterday who had written about the death of his dad. And I said, when did you write this, David? And he said, oh, about a year after he died, which was 16 years ago. I said, would you write a different book now? And he said, I'm not so sure, but, you know, the more he thought about it, he started to think, yeah, I think I would. It would be a very different experience from this perspective. And I think that's what's so precious about us functioning and being well at this point in our lives, because hopefully bring a maturity and a wisdom to those memories. And I like to encourage people to look for what nourished you. What was it through your life that you kept going back to, that built your future and built your life around? I think we have We all have a good story. You just need to look closely enough at it to find that story.
Then the next aspect you take on in the book is intimacy with people, with nature, with God, with the ordinary. You know, a lot of times when we say the word intimacy, our mind will frequently go to our relationships with another human being. And I loved something. It was on page 28. I had it underlined. From the heat of intermingled bodies to the warmth of intermingled spirits. And I love that change. And as I've grown older, I more and more value that intermingling of spirits.
Well, I think that hopefully is the progression from romantic involvement to caring for one another, to that maturity where you realize the interdependency and the true nature of affection and love. And intimacy, in my understanding, is another way to experience God's love. And again, that's that spiritual practice aspect of it, that's a way to practice your interior life is to try to continue to build that relationship and try to forgive one another and be patient with one another. And I'm speaking specifically now to a spousal relationship, but I think it applies to friends and kids and all the rest of it.
And while in the beginning of romantic love, we see each other as perfect, the challenge of love over time is we begin to see each other's imperfections. But I think that's where real love develops, when you see those imperfections and you actually love the person because of them.
You live, yes, and you live with them and you forgive them and you accept them. If you don't, then you're trying to change the person, and that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it leads to, dissatisfaction.
And then we go on to diminishment, the changes that we undergo physically, the changes that we undergo when we give up a career and head into retirement, those of us who are lucky to be able to do so. So talk about diminishment.
That was a difficult essay to produce because we experience all kinds of diminishment. Of course, the first thing you think of is the physical and mental diminishment that you go through and what that means and how to live with it and trying to interpret that as a good sign. I think it's, really dealing with the inevitable but trying to find the positive within that diminishment. A friend of mine who's I think dearly of and we spend a lot of time in conversation, he said, well, I got stuck on diminishment. Well, he referred to it as delamination, so I've almost tempted to change the chapter to delamination. To me, diminishment, again, is another source of growth, another source for us to appreciate, as I try to refer to as the presence of God in our lives.
And then there's gratitude. Everything begins with gratitude.
The mother of all virtues. Well, if we're not grateful, I think we're unhappy. And I think it's a good practice to try to get up every day and be thankful for what you have, to try to identify it. And I think, as I suggest in one of the part of that chapter, is the notion of think of something every day to be grateful for and try to hang your day on that. I walk a lot, and that is something I try to do when I'm walking, is try to think of something that I'm very grateful for and how it's influenced my life and made me a happier person. I mean, gratitude is really about love.
And then finally, acceptance.
Yeah. Well, as I point out, so far I'm very, very lucky. I don't know what I'm going to have to accept. You know, we haven't lost any close family members. I've gone through the normal kinds of things of loss of parents and in-laws and friends and that kind of thing. But the loss of someone close, I haven't experienced. Physical diminishments have been blessed, not that much. So I guess it's easy for me to write about acceptance because I don't have a lot of really adverse things to accept. But I think, too, that it's part of this aging process that we have to learn to accept the diminishments, the losses, and just see that this is part of the normal life cycle.
And acceptance of death at the end of this stage?
Well, interesting that I think about death a lot, or I try to think about death and try not to fear it. But it's interesting because my spouse and I, Sue and I, haven't been able to talk about it yet. And I think it's because we both feel so good. And, you know, this has been such a wonderful period in our lives. And there's a whole world out there that does not want to talk about it. But I think we do need to talk about it and what it means. And, you know, a world without me, a world without Sue, what's that going to be like for our kids, friends and what have you? What's it going to be like for one or the other when one of us is lost?
So I think it's the unknown. Usually fear is goes hand in hand with the unknown. And the fact that we don't want to talk about aging. We certainly don't want to talk about death. So I think that's a big part of the problem. If we talk about it, if we do think about it, if we do talk to our family members and close friends about what we're experiencing, then maybe we can be a little more accepting of that.
Well, we talk about having the conversation and the need for that conversation, particularly with our close ones. And we kind of made up our mind we would do that the last time the whole family was together last Thanksgiving. But we never really got it off the ground. The kids don't want to talk about it, other than the kind of, you know, is the will done, you know, the kinds of things you can comfortably talk about. And the idea that, you know, we don't want any kind of extraordinary means to help us die slower, need to address that issue very clearly.
Yeah.
But I think it's the emotional side of it. We are a very close family. We're blessed that way, even though there's great distances among us. And I do think it's something that we need to address, and I think all families need to address it. What's life going to be like without a particular individual?
Well, this book can be a good introduction to that, and I would put it hand in hand with Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, if you've heard of that one, which talks about those final conversations.
That's an ultimate compliment. Thank you. I'm aware of the book, and I'm aware of Gawande and his writing. He's an amazing man.
Yeah, top shelf book. So I think that the underlying theme I'm getting through all of this is where in the first parts of life, the first middle part, we are all about the external, whether it's physical beauty in youth or in middle age, maybe it's about, you know, getting that house, getting that car, material type things. Whereas in this phase of aging, it's more and more internal and becoming, hopefully, better people on the inside.
I think that's a good assessment. You reach the point where you start to shed the accumulations of a lifetime. I think you reach that point where experiences are important, but things aren't. You don't want to accumulate anything more. You just have to find a way to get rid of it. And I think you're right. This time in life, I think, is an opportunity. It's that opportunity to look inward, to examine our lives, as I said earlier, expand our lives, and perhaps, you know, write a happy ending.